Hello, and welcome to Scaredy Cats. I'm Thomas J. Sotvet.
And I'm Vicky Sotvet, and we're going to prom together.
Yeah, religious, telekinetic, big bloody, and human bloody prom. Just how I remember it. No, I didn't actually go to prom. Did you?
No, but I'm pretty sure there was no telekinesis and no pig blood involved.
Well, you can't really be sure of that if you weren't there, can you?
Fair point, but I'm still pretty sure I would have heard about pig blood and telekinesis.
Well, I think that always makes it a better party, as we are about to see in the movie that we're about to cover. But before I get into that, I think we should maybe get a little bit more into what it is that we're all about here on this show. So as I mentioned, my name is Thomas, and I am a huge horror fanatic. I love it. I've probably seen over 1,000 at this point horror films. I read horror books. I write horror books. And I've even written a couple of horror movie scripts. Of course, I am not big and famous because of it. And you do not like horror movies or horror books. And you do not write horror stories or horror scripts. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do my best to interact with horror as little as humanly possible.
And so, yeah, we had this great idea to maybe flip that on its head and not at all keep you apart from horror, and instead totally immerse you in it, albeit kind of slowly with easier films at first. And that's sort of the idea behind this this podcast that we're starting. We're going to get Vicky, who is a big scaredy cat, to watch these movies, and then at the end review them with me. From both what she thinks is good about them and is well made, and also just how spooky they are. And I will also say how spooky I think they are, as well as how well I think they were made. Now, I've seen so many horror films. If I had to pick a favorite, I would probably say my favorite horror film is John Carpenter's The Thing. And Vicky, even though you don't like horror films, you have seen a few, is that right?
About five.
you wanna go ahead and list those five?
The Thing, because it's your favorite movie.
Mm-hmm.
Alien, Aliens, Cult of Chucky, randomly, The Babysitter, and Gremlins, which you say is a horror movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never found it particularly scary, but that's kind of what the internet tells me, is that it's technically classified as a horror film. Now, we teased as to what it is we're going to be reviewing tonight, and with the prom, and the pig blood, and the telekinesis. In the case that didn't tip you off, is what we're watching. We're watching Carrie, 1976 version Carrie, in fact, which is a movie based on the popular Stephen King novel by the same name. Carrie was first published. It was actually his first novel he ever published. He had written a couple of stories before then. It was originally supposed to be a short story for a magazine. Didn't like it, so he threw it in the garbage, and that's where his wife dug it out and said that she was going to help him write the sort of feminist perspective behind that. And she herself is a horror writer, who's written a few things, which I've never read any of them, but I'm going to have to now that I know that. And their son, Joe Hill, also wrote Horns, which is a movie that Daniel Radcliffe was in. He wrote the book, and Daniel Radcliffe's in the movie where he grows some horns.
I think he's also the devil in that movie. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the plot is he's like Satan or a demon or something, and he's just coming to Earth to like mess up some things.
Coming to Earth. Isn't hell on Earth? Like, is Satan a space alien in this?
No, but, like, I don't know. It's some extra planar dimension, I think.
All right, well, anyway, I think we all agree that Daniel Radcliffe is not the devil. He's, in fact, a pretty awesome human being by all accounts. But apparently he's a good enough actor that he can fool us all into thinking he's the devil. And so I applaud him on that skill, because he's so clearly not. Carrie was also Stephen King's first big screen adaptation of his books, And as we know, his books kind of tend to receive mixed reviews when they're turned into movies. We've got, you know, everything from the latest iteration of It, which is critically acclaimed, by all accounts, a very, very good film. And then we also have kind of things like Maximum Overdrive, which, according to King himself, were basically just a coke-fueled nightmare. And I've seen Maximum Overdrive, and I don't know, I think it's the pinnacle of storytelling. But Rotten Tomatoes says otherwise, so I'm just going to keep that to myself. Carrie, the first movie, being that it's the first movie, he actually only received $2,500 for the rights, which is a very tiny amount considering it went on to make a lot more than that. King now famously gives away the rights to his books to be turned into films if you're a film student for a dollar. It's a peanuts, dirt cheap. So for all of you aspiring film students out there, if you want a nice cheap story to be able to adapt, then look no further than Stephen King's stories.
Of course, you have to like horror to adapt Stephen King stories.
Well, there's also like The Dark Tower and stuff, which I suppose have been made into a different movie.
Aren't they making that into a TV show with Idris Elba?
Oh, I honestly have no idea. I never really got into those books, so
I think they are. I think Idris Elba is the main guy.
Okay. But before I get into more fun facts on Carrie, Vicky and I have been recently reading this amazing book called Men, Women, and Chainsaws, and it very briefly goes in the introduction into the feminist perspective on Carrie, which, as I mentioned, his wife offered to help him write the book being more feminist, and for a while, it was considered to be quite so. So, Vicky, do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there was sort of this idea that Carrie was this woman who was being punished because she's not a stereotypical society woman. She's not beautiful and blonde and
right. She
plays tennis or whatever high school students do.
Very timid. I think it's volleyball in the movie.
I don't know. I was referring to, like, rich white suburban youth playing tennis. And then she comes into her own and gets her grand revenge, and this is this great empowerment story, and that's kind of what King has said it's intended to be. And that view's been critiqued as it has feminist elements, but it's been packaged and delivered to an intended audience of men and mostly adolescent men. So is it really feminist, or is it palatable feminism as a talking point? And what would be the impact of the movie if it didn't care that it was supposed to be selling itself to, you know, teenage boys who get their gym shorts pulled down in the locker room, and it was selling itself actually as this pillar? I haven't seen it, so I don't really know how it handles feminism.
Yeah.
But this is a really common critique that it gets, that it's feminism light.
Feminism light. And I think that, you know, considering it was made in 1976, that's pretty progressive for its time, I guess. And of course, we can't help to, but in the day and age of 2019, when this episode comes out, kind of hold up things of the past and critique them for not being feminist. And I think that's absolutely fair. And I think it's good to kind of like look into the past and learn from our mistakes and learn from the stuff we did wrong. But I imagine at the time, I don't know, if I was a teen girl and I saw Carrie, I'd definitely be trying to explode people's heads with my brain after seeing this movie, well, Scanner style.
I don't think anyone is saying that it has no feminist elements, or that it's anti-feminist, or that it's only intended for male consumption, just that it is somewhat watered down in the way it presents its feminist theory, which, I mean, a lot of things even now that claim to be feminist are watered down to make easy sound bites. So
yeah.
I don't think we can condemn Carrie to the realm of terrible films we must boycott forever because it didn't handle feminism in the best possible sense.
No. And while we're getting you to comment on the movie, do you want to kind of I guess, elaborate on what you think Carrie is about, since you've never seen it, you've never read the book. So why don't you tell us what you're expecting here?
There's a girl who's bullied, and I'm pretty sure at prom they dump some pig's blood on her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm pretty sure she kills some people.
Mm-hmm.
I think the horror part of the film comes from her killing some people at her prom, but I don't know. Maybe there's, like, crazy ghosts or something that's the actual horror part. At some point, it is horrific enough to be a horror movie. That's really all I know. I'm not super nervous because I don't know what's horrifying about this story, which could be a terrible mistake, but I have like a solid 7 out of 10 confidence level that I can handle it.
Well, I haven't seen the movie for a really long time. I saw it when I was quite a bit younger. I was probably like 10, 11. So in order to kind of like prepare myself for this viewing, I found out that Carrie was actually adopted into a Broadway musical, which was written by Lawrence D. Cohen, who is the same fellow who actually wrote the movie. Actually, there's a really funny moment in the first song of the musical where all the students are kind of like singing together, and it's sort of like an introduction. This is what our school is like, blah, blah, blah. And there's one student who's, I guess, chewing on gum or whatever. And the teacher's like, "You gotta put that gum out of your mouth." And the students,
they say it like that?
Yeah, yeah. It's like Deep South. And then the student's like, "Where should I put it, teacher?" Like, all weirdly seductively. And then the teacher's just like, "Put it wherever you like, as long as it's not in your mouth." And I was just like, "Okay, yeah, just pitch that anywhere, whatever." Like, in the middle of class, like, just, I don't know. It seemed like weird. And another weird moment is kind of towards the end of it, when they're killing the pig to get the blood, as you mentioned. They randomly break into Old McDonald while they're killing the pig. And I was listening to this while I was at work, just prepare myself for it. And I just spat coffee all over my desk because they were like, "Old McDonald had a farm. We're here to kill this pig." And yeah, it was really out of place. Another thing that was different about from what I can remember the movie being as opposed to the musical is musical Carrie seems a lot more confident than movie Carrie. As far as I can remember, she reminds me more of like a classic outcast teen in a sort of coming of age John Hughes movie, kind of like a Molly Ringwald sort of character in the musical. And her mom is also like way more pleasant. That's probably because all the lines are sang, and so like, I don't know, happy songs always make horrible religious zealotism seem way more pleasant.
Is there religious zealotism in this movie?
Oh yeah, there's tons of religious themes. We'll get into that afterwards, I imagine, once we watch it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it ended up being coming across like a lot more fun than I remember the movie being, even in the parts that were like religious kind of zealotism. So I guess if there's anybody listening that wants to get me to join their sinister cult, I prefer my proselytation with a size of serenade, and I'm your guy.
So what you're saying is when I want to extol the benefits of doing the dishes, I should do it via song.
Well, no, because there's nothing religious about doing the dishes.
What if I make it a religious experience? Then will the dishes get done?
If you can somehow make doing the dishes a religious experience and you can sing that to me, then I will do all the dishes forever for everybody. If it'll secure me a place in paradise forever.
All right, I'm gonna work on that.
Right. more to this. There was a sequel actually made called The Rage, Carrie 2.
Solid name. Solid name.
It's not great, I guess. I never saw it. It's only got 20% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't think we'll ever be covering it on Scaredy Cats. At least I don't know why we would, unless we covered almost every other horror movie on the planet. Then we might cover The Rage, Carrie 2. So I don't know, maybe 70-year-old Thomas and Vicky listening to this, good luck with that, because I hear it sucks.
You said almost every other horror. What horror movie are we ranking lower than The Rage, Carrie 2?
Oh, there's a few. Plan 9 from Outer Space by Ed Wood, although we might just review that because, I don't know, it's so bad it's good. I don't know, I'm trying to think of other. Ginger Dead Man is pretty down there. Thanksgiving.
So basically, if they're a pun.
Actually, if they're like holiday themed and their name has a pun, odds are pretty good, they're really bad. That's a pretty good rule of thumb. I guess the only movie that I can think of off the top of my head that has an exception to this would be Black Christmas, which is a slasher film that was, I believe, made in Canada, which, woo, Canada, that's where we live, by the way. Fun fact about us. So yeah, we'll be avoiding The Rage, Carrie 2, in the future, I think. But who knows, maybe I'll be eating those words, and we'll be reviewing it at some point. So that's all I really got to say, besides Carrie. Besides, Carrie was directed by Brian D. Palma, as I mentioned. He also directed Scarface, The Untouchables, and the first Mission Impossible film, so I guess this sort of slow burn horror type thing really wasn't his jam. He didn't really vibe well with that, because he went on to make those films. Very, very noir, and Tom Cruise, which is sort of Tom Cruise, like... Well, enough said. It's Tom Cruise. I don't know. Very, very different from this film. It stars Sissy Spack? Spake?
I think it's Spack.
Spack as Carrie White, the titular Carrie. And fun fact, she's also Rod's mom in Hot Rod, which is my favorite stupid comedy film. I love it. She's Rod's mom. We've got Piper Laurie, who's playing Margaret White, which is Carrie White's hyper-religious mom, who in the musical sings a lot of songs and doesn't seem so bad, but is a lot worse in the movie. And William Catt is playing Tommy Ross, which is Carrie's prom date. And a fun fact about him, he actually tried out for the role of Luke Skywalker and was seriously considered before Mark Hamill rolled on. Man, I can't imagine trying out for a movie and then you, like, head out and you're feeling pretty good about the interview and they're like, oh, yeah, you did really good. You're really top of the list. And you walk out in the waiting room and there's freaking Mark Hamill, like, waiting to be the next person in that. Oh, that would be the worst.
To be fair, Star Wars, like, Mark Hamill wasn't anybody. No. Mark Hamill was just, like, some pretty kind of stupid dude.
But I have the feeling that you knew. You went out into that, and you saw that chiseled jaw, and that beautiful, you heard that beautiful voice replying, oh yeah, that's me, when they, like, called them into the room, and you were just like, shit.
But at least I have a starring role in Carrie.
At least I have a starring role in Carrie, and that's really it. I don't know, he may have gone on to do other stuff, the closest other thing to being interesting that I saw from that was the fact that he was almost Luke Skywalker. Anyway, that's pretty much all I've got to say about Carrie before we go and look into it. Vicky, do you have anything else you want to add?
Is it too late to add religious zealotism to the list of things I know about the movie? Because that would bring the list of things I know about the movie up to 4.
I think that's some retroactive application, so we can't really add that to the stuff you don't know about the film. So put that out of your brain, and you're in for some holy bamboozling.
All right, so
we watch this movie.
We'll be back.
Back after this brief intermission with our thoughts on Carrie, because we're about to go watch it now, and we'll be back to talk about it and get my thoughts on it and get Vicky's thoughts on it and talk about how spooky it is. See if it holds up. Test of time. Here we go. Carrie time. Yeah. Okay, welcome back, everybody. We just finished prom. We just got back. It was good times. There was some terrible slow dancing, some awkward kissing. Somebody spiked the punch. The underdog won prom queen and then killed everybody with mind powers. But we made it out alive. We're fine. So I guess not everybody. The two of us escaped. We're the only ones that are okay. But yeah, just finished watching Carrie. My second viewing of the film and Vicky's first. So, thoughts?
Well, I think first and foremost, the director really missed the memo that this is supposed to be a proto-feminist text.
Yeah, it, like, opens with this, like, I don't know, it reminded me almost, like, of a Greek, like, somebody coming across, like, a pond of nymphs. sort of thing.
Little bit. It's very, like, slow-mo showering, and then there's a very phallic shot of the shower head, and the water starts coming out of it.
Yeah, and it what makes it all worse is, like, I'm aware that all the actresses had to have been over 18 when they were filming it, because there's no way they could get away with that otherwise. But as far as the movie's concerned, we're looking at naked high schoolers, specifically. Which was real uncomfy for it to make me be a part of.
For like 5 minutes. It was like a really long voyeuristic scene.
Yeah, there was a lot of lingering. And Carrie White showers like no human being I've ever met before.
She seemed to be having like a good time.
It was like a really good time having that shower. Yeah. Like slowly lathering herself in soap and stuff. It was weird.
Yeah, it was a good time until she started her period, though, and then everyone was throwing things at her and screaming at her.
Yeah, they were throwing tampons at her
and pads.
Yeah, telling her to plug it up. I don't know if that's, you know, obviously some enhanced reality, or if the women's locker room is ever that savage.
I never experienced any locker room at any school I went to like that, but also Canada, I don't know, maybe that's the standard for the Midwest 1970s American high school.
Yeah, maybe up in Canada, everybody probably been like, oh, here's a pad, here's a tampon. No worries, eh?
That was closer to my experience, yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, we can definitely say the gym teacher right off the hop, Miss Collins, seems like just a genuine bro, minus the slapping.
Yeah, she's like, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. Wham! You're fine! And Carrie's like, oh my god. But actually, before even the showering scene, I think it's before the showering scene, they're playing volleyball, and Carrie misses the spike or whatever, and everybody gets so angry at Carrie for missing the spike, and like, I don't know, for backstory on this, I was homeschooled from elementary school onward, from grade 4 onward, so I never experienced high school, but I don't think people gave, they didn't care that much about gym.
No, I definitely never got yelled at for missing volleyballs, and I missed volleyballs all the time. I'm terrible at it.
And like, not even like being yelled at, it was like, eat shit, Carrie. And I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, we were gonna go state, Carrie.
Another person who yells at Carrie a lot in the film is her mother.
Yeah, that's after the shower scene, after she gets slapped by the teacher, and she goes to the principal's office, and he's calling her Cassie, right, and they're like, it's Carrie, it's almost like Django, like, the D is silent, but yeah, and then she gets mad because they keep calling her Cassie. I'd be that teacher, apparently. I'd be the one repeatedly misnaming students, but she explodes the ashtray with her brain, or like knocks it off the desk.
Yeah.
And I think before then she destroys a light bulb, so it starts to kind of...
That's in the shower scene.
Yeah, too. So like her powers are starting to manifest because of her period, I guess, which read into that how you will.
I mean, Stephen King does talk about when he's writing the book, that is, in his opinion, one of the feminist elements, is she starts gaining her power as she moves into womanhood, and the more womanly she becomes, the more powerful she becomes. So that is a very deliberate, on Stephen King's part, piece of the work.
Yeah, and I feel like that comes out a lot during the movie, because Carrie does get like more and more confident I don't know, maybe the whole telekinesis thing is like a metaphor for growing up and being more of a woman. But I did know that, like, notice that as she was researching it in the library later, and like sifting through those old ass library cards and stuff, that after that she was a whole lot more confident and less meek as she started to kind of realize and control her powers. But I mean, if I was discovering I had telekinesis, I would be a lot more confident too.
I think any sort of superpower, I'd be like, hot diggity.
Yeah. Whoa, out of curiosity, what would you do if you had telekinesis? Would you kill everybody at your prom?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I'm not a super big fan of mass murder. Like,
yeah, that's fair. I think I would just use it to mess with people. Like, making people feel like they just were, like, tapped on the shoulder or something like that, and they turn around, and I'd be like,
probably.
Yeah, that's probably what I do. Or fight crime.
So back to the movie.
Yeah.
So after all that, Carrie's sent home, and we get to meet her mother, Margaret.
Before then, Margaret is at Sue's mom's house.
Yes, right? She's trying to convert her.
Yeah, she's like Jehovah Witnessing her and wandering in, and Sue's mom's all like, yeah, these godless times, cheers to that.
Here's $10. Leave my house.
And that doesn't really vibe. That doesn't vibe at all with Carrie's mom.
Yeah. One question I had about Carrie's mom was, is she an abusive person who happens to be religious, or is she abusive because she's religious? And does that question even matter in the context of the film, or does she just need to be unlikable?
Well, yeah, I think it's a pretty common theme in a lot of King's writings. That religion is bad. And generally, people that are religious are nutters, like total abusive, crazy people. It's a very, very common theme in a lot of his work. So I don't know. I think she is bad because she is religious in this scenario. And I mean, that seems to pretty much be all there is to her character, is being hyper-religious and a domineering mother. That's it. I mean, we get a little bit more backstory at the end when Carrie comes back for the prom, which talks about how she was with her husband, or husband essentially like forced himself on her, and she had a moment of weakness, and blah blah blah. But beyond that, we don't really get to know a whole lot about Carrie's mom, beside in the movie anyway. Besides, she's religious, she's domineering, she's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and she starts yelling at Carrie for having her period, because apparently having a period is now a curse rather than biology.
Yeah, I've got in my notes here, Carrie's mom doesn't know how periods work, because, yeah, she's like, oh, you're cursed now, and you must have been thinking sinful thoughts, and that's why you had. So I guess Carrie's mom just thinks that there's people walking around out there that have never thought sinful things, have never brought this curse down upon themselves, who just never have had their period.
That would be a strange world. But in response to Carrie having her period, Carrie's mom locks her in the prayer closet, and that brings us to what to me was probably the most interesting part of the film.
Yeah, after like beating her with a Bible.
Yeah. But in the prayer closet there's a little statue, and I feel like most people would just instinctually be like, Jesus, but yeah. It's not actually Jesus.
Yeah, I thought that was Jesus for sure, with the crazy 70s hair. Those 70s hair Jesus with that sweet flow.
No.
He looked like a rejected member of Twisted Sister or Queen.
He did, but it wasn't Jesus, that's actually Saint Sebastian.
Yeah.
And the reason I found Saint Sebastian was interesting is a couple of reasons. Saint Sebastian, for those of you who are not super well-versed on your Catholic saint history, was one of the first saints who was martyred. He was martyred in Rome in, like, the late 200s, early 300s. And according to legend, he was tied to a tree and then shot with arrows. He was probably more likely beaten to death with clubs. Arrows have nothing to do with it. And he's always painted in the most ridiculously sexy ways, dying from, like, one arrow in his calf while naked.
Right, you know, that's how we like our saints.
It is. But the reason I thought it was interesting that it was Saint Sebastian instead of Jesus is Saint Sebastian is the patron saint of plague victims. Veneration goes up a lot whenever there's about a plague. He's also the patron saint of soldiers. And then he's the patron saint of two really interesting things, and one is athletes, and the other is holy death or martyrdom. Mm. Not holy death and martyrdom. They're kind of related, but anyways. And that was interesting to me for a couple of reasons, because Tommy is an athlete who does die, and he gets later kind of a Jesus-like carrying off.
Yeah, he's sort of like, he's hit on the head with the, I mean, we'll get to it, but yeah, he gets carried off over the crowd. It's very like, everybody wants to put their hand on him.
Right, but it's just, to me, that one statue foreshadowed the whole rest of the film, and it had to be intentional, because it's not like you can't find a Jesus statue in the 1970s America.
Yeah, you don't think he just went to like the that he just went into the pawn shop and he was like, give me your Jesus, like Brian De Palma, and he was like, oh, I've got this guy, good enough, okay, budgets.
No, I think that was definitely a deliberate choice to have Saint Sebastian rather than Jesus.
Yeah. And yeah, and it again also predicts how Carrie's mom. It predicts what's going to happen to Carrie's mom.
Well, and Carrie herself in a way, which we'll get to later.
We'll get into that. So yeah, after being stuffed in the prayer closet with the Saint Sebastian with the crazy 70s hair, 70s flow, we cut, I think, at that point to the teacher punishing the girls that were throwing tampons at her in the field, and they're all doing physical education. And the one girl that's always wearing that red hat, for some reason, is allowed to have matching red shorts, but everyone else has, like, blue or black shorts. She's the only one with the different shorts. I don't know. I feel like everybody kind of, like, panders to her hat-wearing ways, because that's... she's always wearing that hat, or the hat is nearby or on top of her head in some way, and I just found that weird. And the gum line... actually, I wanted to point out the gum line in the gym scene is actually, like I pointed out earlier in the musical, but it's way less like, just throw it wherever you want. The teacher actually tells the mean main lady, Chris to that she can choke on it for all she cares, which is definitely more in line with teaching, I think, than just, yeah, flick that gun wherever you like.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she's punishing these girls. They're working out. And then Chris won't stand for it and decides that she would rather not go to prom, I guess, than do this physical education. Because that's the reason why they're doing the physical education, is because it's either this or they're not going to prom, any of them.
She just seems to have more problems than not going to prom, to be honest.
You don't think that pouring pig's blood on a outcast and then later trying to hit her with your car as any sign of, a troubling mental state?
I feel like you could maybe get evaluated for that, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll make an appointment after this.
But,
that happens. Chris storms off, and I think she's just like, I'm going to get Carrie back for this.
Yeah, she just has some thought. This isn't over, I think, is what she says as she's leaving.
Yeah.
And then... Sue asks Tommy if he'll help her out.
Yeah, because Sue feels bad about what... and you can kind of see in the scenes where they're all being reprimanded together, you can see that it's affecting Sue the most. She actually gets some, like, watery eyes going on. She's looking at the ground, feeling pretty ashamed in herself. All the other girls seem to be kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And then after she asks Tommy to help her... a wild John Travolta appears to take Chris on a date.
Yeah, second movie John Travolta, back before he went insane.
Yeah, his first movie was The Devil's Reign, which incidentally is also a horror film, so I don't know if we're going to watch that one at some point.
Maybe at some point.
But he seems to have gotten his start in horror movies, and his relationship with Chris is just, I don't know, they slap each other a lot and call each other names. And
yeah, it was sort of like Young, the Roald Dahl's The Twits.
Yeah, that's a good analogy,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, like they don't really seem to like each other very much, but is a sexy concept, I guess, to them, because they often go from, like, belittling one another, berating one another, and physically abusing one another, to being like, ooh, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, the whole thing is weird. Anyways...
There's not really many healthy relationships in Carrie.
There's not.
No.
Then we continue on, and Tommy asks Carrie to the prom, and she runs away.
Yeah,
because she thinks he's playing a prank on her.
Yeah, which is fair, because up until this point, she's getting teased. She gets teased by, like, that little kid when she's walking home from that.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I probably also would be like, this is in some way a prank. But Tommy just seems like a genuinely nice dude who, like... genuinely wants to help Sue and Carrie.
Yeah, a little clueless. I think at first he's not sure why it is that Sue would want him to go with Carrie instead of her. But once he commits and once he's like agrees to go ahead and do it, he actually does. Like, it's very, very genuine. And I think a lot of movies, I think, that would be in a similar, have a similar situation play out often. If I'm recalling, I can't even recall anything that ever does this, but for some reason, I think that generally speaking, the boy that is forced to take out the girl always seems to be begrudging about it.
Right, and Tommy just genuinely seems to want to make sure Carrie has a good time.
Yeah.
And, like, actually has a nice...
Yeah.
Prom.
So yeah, he invites her, and then he later shows up at her house, and her crazy religious mom, Margaret, is sleeping, and Carrie wants him to go, and he's like, "I'm not going until you agree to go to prom with me." And she says, "Eventually, yeah, okay," and slams the door in his face.
Yeah, and then we cut to another scene of John Travolta and the gang. Killing a pig with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, and this is the part in the musical where they break into Old MacDonald, and I
I almost died of laughter because they don't break into old McDonald in the movie at all. In fact, John Travolta like kills it with a sledgehammer.
It is a sledgehammer. After they have an argument about who's going to kill the pig because nobody actually wants to kill the pig.
Right, and then John Travolta's like, step aside, hammer time.
Stop.
That's the one, yeah. So he kills this pig, and then they're draining blood out of it, and he ends up getting some blood on Chris. My computer's updating. So he gets some blood on Chris. She's upset, calls him shithead again or something like that. And
Stupid shit,
right, which I have never heard anyone call anyone else that. I have never been called that. I've never called anybody that.
I feel like it's not a bad thing that we don't associate with Chris and John Travolta's
character. It's just, I don't know, I've never heard those particular, like, put-downs coupled together like that. Maybe it's a regional thing, but...
It must be.
Yeah.
But anyways, so Carrie has now agreed to go to prom, and she's making her dress, and her mom is just distraught over this decision.
Yeah, like, telling her that all boys are evil.
Right, and we need to go pray, and she's not going, and she, like, throws a cup of water or soup or something in Carrie's face. And at that point, Carrie uses her telekinesis to slam all the windows in the house shut, and there's a very, very immediate power shift.
Yeah, Carrie really flips the script in that scene. I think that's, again, because she's starting to get a handle on her power. She's been reading up on it. She has a scene with her mom where she's telling her mom that this isn't witchcraft, it's a power that she's got, and there's other people in the world that have it, because you can always believe everything you read in books.
Did you notice the ticking?
Ticking?
So, right when that balance of power shifts, there's a really faint ticking sound, and as the rest of the movie progresses, the ticking gets louder until the point when the mom is, like, crazily chopping carrots in the kitchen, and it's this really loud, incessant ticking. So it's almost like the countdown to her mom going crazy and the whole prom going bad, and it was just a really interesting little background note that I noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't actually notice that. That's very, like... It's like a more subtle Dunkirk in the
thing. It's like a more subtle Dunkirk that doesn't happen for the whole movie, so I don't have to have an anxiety attack that lasts 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that's a... War is a special kind of horror film. War films.
Yeah, anyways. They go to prom. They're having a great time.
Oh, but before this, at some point, she's getting her makeup... Her teacher helps her get her makeup done. I think before even the dress is being made, her teacher's helping her. And I just wanted to point out that if anybody goes back and watches it, there's this weird zoom-in on the teacher's face after she's like, oh, you look so pretty, like that, before the scene ends, where she does this thing where she, like, looks into the middle distance and the smile fades from her face and she gives, like, an Arrested Development, I've made a huge mistake sort of, like, look on her face. And it's really random, and I don't know why that actress, what's her face, Betty Buckley, decided to do that. It was a weird character moment.
Maybe she thought they'd already cut.
Yeah, maybe, but they decided to keep it. I don't know. Anyways, that was a weird moment. So they go to prom.
Yes, they go to prom. It's a good time. It takes Tommy a while to get Carrie kind of into the swing of prom.
Yeah, she tries to, there's our cat, if anybody can hear that, she tries to, like, get him to leave before they're even inside when they just pull into the parking lot. She's clearly quite nervous about it. And then at the table, she doesn't want to dance. And
right. But Tommy does eventually convince her to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with this, like, spinning shot as they're, like, dancing, which gets faster and faster and faster, which, again, to me was kind of that countdown that, like, things are starting to spiral out of control.
I found that spinning actually to be, because it got more and more intense, because she's, like, as they're dancing, asking him questions, because she's still clearly somewhat suspicious as to his motives for asking, which, like, fair. If one of the most popular dudes at school asks out the, like, most hated girl in apparently the town, like, everybody just hates her, and he's gonna go and ask her to the prom, and And so, like, as she's focusing in and almost getting to the bottom of why it is he actually asked her out at the request of Sue, the spinning gets kind of faster and faster and faster, but it gives up eventually. And I got to say that during this entire prom scene, like, I don't know, I encourage any, like, men that are going to be going to prom with their dates, or I guess ladies going to prom with their dates, they're going to be this way, just to act how Tommy does. Because he's actually a really good prom date, I think.
He is. He's very much like whatever Carrie wants, he's here to make her comfortable. He's here to make sure Carrie has a good time. And he's really being like a genuinely sweet person. And he's being a genuinely, like, good guy, which just makes me sad about what happens to him. You don't deserve that.
Yeah, the whole time he's like, you want to dance? She's like, no. And she's like, I'm sorry, I'm not being, like, sociable. And he's like, it's fine, we'll take it at whatever speed you want, no worries.
Yeah, but all good things must come to an end. And
well, first there's a very, like, Ocean's 11 long shot.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to talk about.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All good things must come to an end. So there's this one single take of them rigging the votes so that Carrie and Tommy are elected the prom king and queen.
Oh, before that, though, Tommy and Carrie get the ballot for voting.
Right.
And there's a very, very symbolic where she doesn't want to vote for themselves because that would be, you know, being full of themselves and... There, and Tommy looks to her and says, "The devil with false modesty." And she's like, "Yeah, I'm on board with that." And then they vote for themselves.
Right.
Which, as we know, Carrie's mom, Margaret, would not be pleased.
Right. She probably also wouldn't be too pleased with "to the devil." That would probably...
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, like a lot of like... Anyway.
Anyway, yeah, so there's this long take, and then Carrie and Tommy are elected, and there's this great moment where everyone's clapping, and Carrie is brought up on stage, and they're giving her the flowers.
And it's all just so happy.
And then Sue has snuck in to, like, watch the happy moment.
Yeah, like, almost like the, I don't know, like, the Queer Eye guys might show up to an event afterwards and be like, see how the little, like, wallflower that is growing and doing well at this concert or whatever. Like, it's very, like, her. She's, like, looking in to see, make sure Carrie's having a good time.
Do they call them wallflowers because they blossom?
Probably. I mean...
Oh, man, I have to look at the etymology of this after we're done this episode.
All right, to be continued on the wallflower.
We'll update you all later on wallflowers. But anyways, Miss Collins sees Sue... and thinks she's causing mischief, so she throws her out.
But meanwhile, like, while Miss Collins is noticing Sue is following this line onto the pig's blood, which is in the rafters above Carrie's head. And she's following the line that leads all the way down, and she sees Chris underneath the stage getting ready to pull it. And so Sue's slowly starting to realize what's going on here. And so she comes out of her hiding place and is looking up at the blood like, oh, my God. And the teacher's looking at Sue and going, oh my God, and...
Yeah, it's just a great miscommunication scene, and Sue is thrown out, and Miss Collins is like, great, solve that problem, and then Chris pulls the rope.
Save the day!
And then Chris pulls the rope, and there's pig blood everywhere, and Miss Collins is like, I did not save the day.
Yeah, damn, that wasn't good of me. Well, I don't know, she probably wasn't thinking too much about throwing Sue out at that moment.
Right, and then there's... this sort of weird scene where the audio is kind of, like, overlaid, so you'll have, like, a clip of, like, Tommy silently mouthing, like, what the hell, he's clearly very upset, but, like, you'll be listening to a cut of, like, the principal calling Carrie the wrong name, and she's kind of having this moment of, like, I was right, this was all a trap.
Yeah, and there's, like, they're all gonna laugh at you, like, over and over and over again, and we cut to Carrie's point of view, you can see that she's seeing everybody laughing, and it's like a kaleidoscope sort of weird thing where she's seeing everybody pointing and laughing at her, but in reality nobody's actually pointing and laughing at her. They're all staring at her very, very shocked and surprised. I think only the, like, popular girls that were in on it are the only ones actually laughing.
Right, Hat Girl
and her obsession with hats. Yeah.
But anyways, that takes us to when this, I guess, makes it a horror movie, and Carrie unleashes a fire hose and closes all the doors.
Yeah, Tommy gets hit over the head with the bucket and has his Saint Sebastian moment where he's very, very splayed out. And
he's being carried by six people.
One thing I wasn't sure of is, because he clearly dies, did the bucket kill him?
I think it's unclear, and I don't know if that's deliberate or not, but I think the point is it's made clear later that Tommy has died.
He has died, yeah.
And whether he dies in the fire or because he's hit in the head.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, it's a big old farm bucket. It's a big metal bucket. I imagine that would not be good for your nog to be whacked with.
Probably not, but it's funny because this is supposed to be like the climactic horror moment, and I found the editing really reduced the impact, because it's this weird, like, you're having two kind of points of view at the same time, side by side, and they're cutting at different times.
It was almost like an old, like, early 2000s comic book film, where it's like, you've got Carrie on the one side, and somebody getting thrown up against a wall over here, and then Carrie on the other side, and a guy getting electrocuted over here.
Right, but the editing just kind of made me be like, what is happening? So I wasn't horrified, yeah. I think in large part because I was just trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it was a hard to follow scene, and I think I was trying to pay attention to how everybody was dying, and then the teacher noticeably gets like whacked by this giant pendulum like sign thing, I guess, and she gets crushed underneath that. But a lot of the deaths were like, they just happened to be wet and fall into something electrical.
Well, I mean, they didn't happen to be wet. Carrie was spraying them all with
fire hose. But that's what I mean, is they were all wet and they fell into something electrical. That's true. A lot of people died by electrocution.
That's true.
And then Carrie sets the entire place on fire.
Right, and she leaves and she's walking. And did you notice that she seemed to be producing pig blood?
Yes, when she first gets covered, it's very realistic. She, you know, clumped in her hair a little bit,
right? Like part of all her dress. Her.
But then the like the movie poster and stuff, and like the scene everybody remembers of her standing there, totally saturated in pig blood, is like it cuts away from her being actually covered in pig blood, and then cuts back to her being totally saturated, like the blood just like spread out rapidly,
right? Like it. It's almost as she was like, oh man, I don't have even coverage. Quick, gotta rub some here and like rub some over here. Okay, that's it. It's a better even color.
Gotta look more intimidating. She's like, okay, well, if I'm gonna do this, like kind of like how like barbarians might like rub blood underneath their eyes or something like that.
She does that while having a mental breakdown and also telekinetically controlling fire hoses and setting things on fire. So yeah. That's just some good skill. But she's walking home, and then Chris and John Travolta, who's character's name is Danny, but I've just called him John Travolta this whole time.
That's fair.
Chris and Danny are driving and see Carrie and are like, obviously time to hit her with the car for some reason.
Yeah, and I don't know. At this point, do they realize what's happened? I couldn't tell because they didn't seem particularly broken up if they did know. Like, they didn't seem to care too much.
I was unclear if, like, maybe they were trying to hit her with the car because they had seen what had happened at the gym but somehow got out and were, like, trying to, like, get revenge, or if they're just jerks who want to hit her with a car. I'm unclear.
And I actually looked it up, and all I can find is it, like, the most mention I got of it is Chris and Billy attempt to run over Carrie as she walks home. Carrie causes their car to flip and explode, killing them.
Right.
It's the best.
So they
I
die.
Got. Yeah. So I don't know. They super like, I don't know. They look really homicidal when they're trying to run her down.
Right.
Like Wikipedia said, she flips it and it catches on fire and explodes. And that is the end of Chris and John Travolta.
Yes. And she goes home and she has yet another voyeuristic water scene where she's like cleansing,
washing all the blood off of her.
It's very weird. The director has a thing with naked women in baths and showers, like, I'm convinced.
Bathing specifically.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyways, so Carrie gets dressed and comes out of the room, and her mom is waiting behind the door.
Standing behind the door like Michael Myers.
Right, and the whole house is filled with candles. I think while we were watching, you said it's all Dark Souls up in here.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was so funny, because it's true. I've always wondered in those games, like, who's going around lighting these, like, 1,000 candles in this unopened tomb?
Well, clearly it is Margaret White.
Clearly,
Margaret White is the one in all the video games lighting all the candles, because she's just so dang good at it.
Right, and Carrie is asking her mom to hold her, because she just had pig's blood dumped on her and killed her whole class.
Bad day.
She said it's a bad day.
It's been a bad day.
And Margaret is just going with this, like, oh, well, I was weak and I should have killed myself after your father had sex with me, and I should have killed you, and blah, 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 and they sink down to the floor.
And that's kind of like where she goes into, like, your dad forced himself on me, and I liked it, which, I don't know, I didn't like that too much.
Yeah, that whole scene was weird, but anyways, Carrie's like, well, let's pray, and it'll all be normal, and her mom's like, yes, let's pray for the last time, and then they're praying, and she stabs Carrie in the back.
Yeah.
which I called as soon as all the candles were lit. I was like, oh.
Carrie's definitely getting a knife in the back.
Right. And so Carrie is running away from Margaret, and Margaret is chasing her with this knife.
She's like crawling away from her, yeah.
Right. And please, she gets to the prayer closet, and she's trying to open the prayer closet, and Margaret's about to stab her again, and then Carrie causes knives to fly at her, and pins her hand to the wall, and she's stabbed with a whole bunch of things, and she's stabbed in her head.
Like, stabbed with like a potato peeler.
Right.
Like Carrie starts running out of knife and just to like throw it at her, and it's like, potato okay, yeah, it works.
It'll do. But the way she's stabbed and the way her arm is kind of pinned up and she leans her head is an exact replica of the Saint Sebastian statue in the prayer closet, which...
crazy 70 hairs and all, like...
Crazy 70 hair and all, but... And I thought that was really interesting as sort of a parody, but not a funny parody of...
A sad parody.
Well, it was because, I mean... So, Saint Sebastian is martyred. He's killed for being a holy man. That's what martyring is. And... Margaret is the very religious person who is, in a way, also being killed because she's religious, because her religiosity has convinced her that she needs to kill Carrie. But...
She thinks Carrie's a witch at that point. Right. She calls Carrie a witch a bunch. Yeah.
So, in a sort of twisted sense, she is being martyred, but her death isn't holy, or I would argue it's not holy, although in some way it is, because it's Carrie's release from this life of tyranny. This is why I thought the Saint Sebastian statue was so interesting a choice, because it really raises these questions about what is the role of Margaret and why Margaret is dying the way she is and the impact this has.
And I like, even little kid Thomas watching the movie was pretty, like, I knew the way that Margaret White dies is very, but I thought at the time, I was like, that's Jesus being crucified, clearly. And so, like, even little kid Thomas knew that there was some symbolism.
No arrows in the Jesus crucifixion, but...
No. But there was a spear of destiny, but...
The spear of Antioch, actually, is what you're thinking.
The spear of destiny?
The spear of Antioch. Crusaders go and get it later from Antioch, supposedly. Anyways, we digress down a history tangent, then we'll be here for another 3 hours. So Carrie suddenly realizes she's killed her mother and drags them both into the prayer closet where she lights the house on fire and starts crumbling it, and she dies holding her dead mom.
But by all accounts, I'm seeing that Carrie does this on purpose, like she's purposely crumbling the house, but I don't know, in the movie she didn't really seem to be into that.
In the movie she seemed to me to start the fires, like, accidentally and then die. Like, to me, she was dead already when this was happening, because her head's tilted back and her eyes are open.
But even when she's, like, dragging her mom into the prayer closet, like, we go outside and we see the house and it's, like, starting to crumble in on itself. And then we go back to her and she's, like, looking around and she seems to be panicking to me, almost like she's lost control of her power.
It, to me, spoke of grief. Like, she has clearly lost control. She's killed all her classmates. She's killed her mom.
Yeah, bad day.
Yeah, bad day. But to me, that was not an intentional, like, oh, I have to relegate myself.
No. To me, it really spoke of just, like, I don't know, the power was beyond her control at that moment because her emotions were feeding it, and it just came down as a big destructive implosion.
Right. And we go to Sue, and Sue's mom is getting a phone call.
Right.
And she talks about how she wouldn't let Sue go to the funerals, and she's still sleeping a lot, but she's doing a little better.
Yeah, we cut to, like, 2 weeks later.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, that whole scene, because that sets the whole movie up as a sort of Hamlet. Because in Hamlet, everybody dies tragically, kind of their own fault, except for Horatio, who's left alive after trying to help Hamlet in the same way Sue is trying to help Carrie, and he's the only one to bear witness of all the terrible things that have happened. So to me, it was very Shakespearean tragedy in the way Sue is deliberately left alive.
Yeah, and we'll get into more about the tragedy thing, because I got some thoughts. But then we see Sue's dreaming. It's pretty obvious by the sepia tone.
And the flowing white gown.
I don't know, maybe it's the 70s. I don't know what people were wearing back then.
I don't think they were wearing flowing white gowns.
But Carrie's mom's wearing a rad cloak at some point in this movie.
That's true. I don't know. The fashion is questionable in this film.
But anyway, so it's clearly a dream sequence. She's walking up to this the lot where Carrie's house was, and it's just a big pile of rubble. It's a big, neat pile of rubble, and there's a for sale sign on the pile of rubble, except it's been graffitied, and there is graffiti on it that says Carrie White burns in hell, with the big, like, crazy straw arrow pointing downwards.
Right, and then Sue is just about to lay the flowers down, and this bloody hand shoots up and grabs her ankle, and that's what wakes her up. And that was the only moment of the film I found legitimately scary, because I was not expecting this bloody hand to appear.
Yeah, jump scares are sort of cheating.
Sometimes.
I found it scary.
I
am the judge of what is scary on this podcast.
Fun fact about that, that bloody hand is actually Sissy Spake. His hand. She didn't want to use a stunt double for that, so I guess they just buried her in rocks, and
they're probably styrofoam rocks. Bury her in actual rocks.
I don't know. Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, but it wasn't a Stanley Kubrick movie.
No, but
it'd be 3 hours long if it was a Stanley Kubrick movie.
That's true. It would be the moon landing.
Right. Anyways, the film ends with Sue being comforted by her mother.
Right.
And then that's
clearly very upset by the events.
That's the movie.
And then we cut out to the sad, dreamy piano theme that is Carrie. To anybody that's never heard it before, if you just look up, Carrie soundtrack piano theme, I'm sure you'll be able to find it. It's really, it's fitting of the film right up until the horrible slaughter, and then it's very, the weird choice as, the theme. Although it kind of fits, I guess. It's a weird choice if it was a horror film, but here's, where we are going to analyze the movie as a whole. I find Carrie to be less of a horror film and more of a tragedy.
I would agree. It's very, there's misunderstandings that have caused the problem. There's the villain. There's the tragic hero who, as Stephen King would say, is coming into her power, but then she's brought down by her own power. It is actually a very sad story, except for her bloody hand coming up and grabbing Sue, and then it's a horror movie, but for only 3 seconds.
The 3 seconds of, oh my god.
Right. But I would agree with you otherwise that it's a tragedy.
Yeah, and I remember even when I was a kid, I wasn't bothered by this movie at all. I didn't see what the big deal was. The entire time that Carrie's freaking out and killing the classmates, I just felt bad for Carrie. I felt bad for the classmates. I felt bad for everybody.
Yeah.
The only people in this film I didn't feel pretty bad for even a little bit is John Travolta and Chris. They totally deserve to have their car flipped and blow up.
I feel like the mother also. I don't feel bad for her.
Well, I don't know.
She tried to kill Carrie.
Yeah. And the movie tries to make us feel a little bad for her, I guess, by being she was clearly sexually assaulted and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, that doesn't really, it's not like our tragedies turn us into horrible human beings, right?
So how would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 for how well-made it is?
So for how well-made it is, I would say, given its time, that it was actually made pretty well. A lot of weird kind of editing choices, I think. I've made a horrible mistake. Arrested Development moment of the teacher, and a couple of other weird sound problems and
so 1 to 10 though.
So 1 to 10 for how well made it is. I think in the fairness of the time, I can give it a solid 7.
I feel like it to me is a 6. They take the whole climax of the movie and they just ruin it with this weird choppy dual scene editing.
That's a little frustrating because that's clearly supposed to be the big scene. What everybody's here for. What's on all the promotional products.
Right. Yeah. And then it just doesn't
That ends happen. Up being sort of underwhelming.
Scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy it?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I'd rather be waterboarded than watch it again, and 10 being I almost prefer it to Breathing, I'd give it a 5. It's an enjoyable movie. I mean, it's a classic. It's an important movie as far as horror films are concerned. It's Stephen King's first published novel. I don't know if it's at all valuable as a feminist movie. I don't know if it's at all valuable as a horror film. I don't think it is. It's not very valuable as just a scary movie.
What about valuable as launching John Travolta's career?
You know what? That would make me not like it because he's not a great guy.
That's fair.
Curse you, Carrie.
Give it a 6. I did not enjoy watching this film. I wasn't super vibing at any point. I mostly just felt bad for a lot of the characters. And lastly, how spooky on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being children with weak heart conditions could handle it, and 10 being brave people with their amygdala removed.
Definitely a 1 for me. I was not spooked as a child, and I am not spooked as an adult. Even the hand bit, I don't know. It's a cop out. I don't know. It feels sort of it's not fitting with the movie, the rest of the movie. It feels really, really cheap, kind of thrown at that last second just for that shocking ending. And Carrie killing people, I just felt bad. So on a scale of 1 to 10 for how spooky it is, I'd say 1. Children with weak hearts
watch away.
I would give it a 2 because I was genuinely spooked by the hand that did actually freak me out. But considering it's me, a 2 is probably the lowest number you're ever going to hear on this podcast.
Well, just you wait, because we have to watch Gremlins and Tremors eventually, and Kevin Bacon makes everything better.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure people also get eaten by giant worms.
Yeah, but it's fun. It's like, it's fun. We'll see. You'll see. Anyways, that does it for Carrie and this episode of Scaredy Cats. Next time we'll be covering The Exorcist, so I guess we're continuing the religion train. All aboard, choo-choo-choo. I think that's going to be fun. I've actually never seen The Exorcist, which is crazy because it's so important to the genre. But I don't know. Yeah, I just never sought it out, never watched it. So it's going to be a first-time viewing for me as well.
I think it'll be terrifying, but that's just me because I think most things are terrifying. But we'll see, and we'll let you know in episode 2 what we thought of The Exorcist. Until then, I'm Vicky.
And I'm Thomas.
And thank you for listening to us, and good night.
Good night.